This is a presentation of LifePoint Church. Our mission is to make gospel-centered disciples of Jesus Christ. For more information, please visit sharethelife.org.
Hey, good morning. My name is Zach. I'm one of the pastors here and part of our preaching team. Excited to be closing out today's series in the Gospel of John that we started last August. Have been here for quite some time. Today we close out that series, and I want to begin with a question for you to think about. And it's this question: what have you been following lately? What have you been following lately? The reason I ask this question is this. I'm noticing from experience that what or who we tend to follow influences us in a way that we become like that thing that we're following. Let me just give you a few examples. I don't know if you're like me, but maybe you've been on the roller coaster ride of following different articles or people as it pertains to COVID-19, right? This is what it's like. So one day I read a certain article from a certain group of people, and I think, wow, this global pandemic is a really big deal. I don't think I'm going to grocery shop for another 2 years, all right? And then the very next day, I might read something else from a different group of people and another article, and I think, well, maybe this pandemic isn't a big deal, and you know what? Carnival is running some pretty cheap cruises right now. Maybe we should just go on a family cruise. And this is the roller coaster ride, but do you notice what I'm following has a huge influence on what I'm thinking about this virus, how I feel about it? Who I'm following is influencing even my behavior. Don't you see? What I'm following is shaping who I'm becoming. And this isn't just true of the coronavirus. It's true in all of life, for better or worse. Maybe you are a person who says, I'm going to follow a certain kind of diet. And maybe it's the Whole30 diet. And so you read a book about Whole30. You start reading the recipes. You cook a certain way. You change the way you eat with your family. And pretty soon, you're making ketchup from home from scratch, with no added sugar. And see, what you're following and who you're following is influencing who you're becoming. It's changing you. If you follow Joanna Gaines on Instagram, pretty soon, in time, your house will start to look like an HGTV magazine. Who you follow shapes who you become. If you follow Fox News, or if you follow CNN News, pretty soon, in time, the way you think, the way you feel, the choices you make, it's inevitable. Don't you agree? From experience, who you follow shapes who you're becoming. And we shouldn't be surprised by this, because the Bible actually speaks to this principle. We see it in several places, but one of the places is here in Proverbs. In Proverbs, look at Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20 with me. It says this: whoever walks with the wise becomes wise. Notice walking with, living, following, learning from these people that are wise. Notice it shapes, it influences who you become. You become wise. And conversely, it's true as well. Companion of fools, you become foolish to your own demise. Who or what we follow shapes who we become. And so I ask the question to you again: who are you following lately? If this is true, that who you follow shapes who you become, it becomes critically important and relevant for your life how you answer that question. Who am I following? I believe Jesus understood this about people, and that's why as he walked around in his earthly ministry, throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus, as he meets people, saying these two words over and over again. When he meets people, he says this: follow me. Follow me. In fact, if you read through the Gospels, that phrase, those two words out of Jesus' mouth, occurs 22 times. In the Gospel of John that we've walked through since September, that occurs 7 times. And 2 of those instances are in our text today. Jesus says, follow me. What does he mean when Jesus says, follow me? What's he really asking? And if you were reading today's text and you saw that word come up two times, he says to Peter, follow me. You might, just like me in my study, you might ask, I wonder what Jesus means by that. And a great way to go about that, you could actually discover what Jesus means simply by doing this. You might have Bible software, you could flip through the Bible itself, or you can use this amazing technology. It's just called Google. And you can go on Google and you can type in instances or examples of Jesus saying, follow me. Click. And you pull them up and you just start reading through examples in the Bible of when Jesus says, follow me, and you can start to get a sense and understanding of what Jesus meant when he said, follow me. Now, I could give you 10 verses, but for the sake of time, I'm just going to point to one verse that helps define for us what Jesus meant when he said, follow me. It's a little bit more comprehensive in this one. It's Matthew chapter 16, verse 24, and I think I've got it on the screen here. Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 16, and this is how he's defining follow me. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Let me unpack this for a moment. We're defining what it means to follow Jesus. And for Jesus, here's one verse, one sentence that he connects both this phrase, follow me, with being his disciple. And they're virtually synonymous. I mean, Jesus uses that word follow me sometimes literally, but usually figuratively. It's a figure of speech saying, follow me, become my disciple. A disciple was just a learner. It was someone who said, I'm going to watch the way you live. I'm going to see your example. I'll sit under your teaching and I'm going to learn from you. And so Jesus, when he says, follow me, he wants you and invites you to be his disciple, a learner. That's one aspect of what it means to follow Jesus. But Jesus takes it another level. He's not just asking you to be a learner of him. He wants you to follow him exclusively. Look at this. Jesus says, you want to be my disciple? He says, I will become the only leader of your life, even over yourself. He says, deny yourself. You will no longer be the leader of your life. You want to follow me? Stop leading yourself, deny yourself, and let me be your sole leader. So when Jesus says, follow me, you're a disciple, you're a learner, but you're also exclusively devoted to him. But there's more. When Jesus says, follow me, he also says that you will suffer. Look, he says, when you follow me, you will take up your cross. A picture of horrible torture and suffering. Jesus knew this call to follow him would not be daisies and roses. It would include suffering. So when Jesus spoke to Peter on a beach, when he first met him, and he said to Peter, he said, Peter, follow me. He was saying, Peter, become my disciple. Learn from me so that you'll become like me. Deny yourself. Be exclusively devoted to being a follower of me, Jesus. And Peter, when you follow me, you're going to suffer. But follow me even through suffering. That's what Jesus means when he says, follow me. And what's amazing about the conclusion of the Gospel of John that we read today is that even though 3 years earlier, when Jesus first meets Peter, he says two words to Peter, follow me. A lot has happened in 3 years. Jesus has died. He has been raised from the grave. And now on the same beach, likely in the same family fishing boat, what does Jesus say again to Peter? The same call. Nothing's changed. Peter, your first call is to follow me. It's that simple, right? Our life with Jesus. And to give Peter credit, he does this so well for about one sentence. And then he trips, as we often do. Look at the text with me in John chapter 21. And if you're in your homes right now, please grab a Bible as we camp out in this section of Scripture and open it so that you can see these words. I don't have any authority, but this word is God's word. Read it with me. I'm going to start with the first two words. of verse 19 of chapter 21. Jesus is speaking to Peter, and he says, Peter, follow me. Verse 20. The very next sentence. Peter is walking with Jesus. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following him, the one who had leaned back against him during the supper and had said, Lord, who is it that's going to betray you? It's defining who this disciple is. It's John. When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? So picture the scene. They're on the beach. Peter is following Jesus. They're walking closely. And for some reason, the disciple John is following a few paces behind, I suppose, enough that Peter has to physically turn his neck, take his gaze off of Jesus as he's still walking, and look back at another disciple. And Jesus has just given Peter clear instructions. Peter, I want you to follow me. And the first sentence of this journey of following Jesus after the resurrection, Peter gets distracted. It's so like Peter. He looks back and he's asking this question, what about John? What about John? And the context helps us understand this question because remember, Jesus has just told Peter, Peter, I'm recommissioning you. You're going to be a shepherd of my church in Jerusalem. You're going to reach the Jews. And Peter, you're going to suffer and die as a martyr. That's how your life's going to end. Follow me. And now Peter's looking back at John and he's asking Jesus, Jesus, okay, you've just told me my unique role and how I'm going to suffer, but what about this guy? What about John? You see, in following Jesus, Peter trips up in a common distraction, and that distraction we might call the comparison trap. The comparison trap. Peter wants to know about John's role. What's John's role in the kingdom going to be like? I mean, you said that I would be a shepherd in this area to these people. Is John going to have a higher status or lower status? And what about John? You told me I'm going to become a martyr, that I'm going to be stretched out. Is John going to have a long life or a short life? Will he be a martyr too? I want to know. Will he have to suffer as much as I will following you? Peter starts comparing. And here's the problem. Here's the problem of the comparison trap. On the journey of life, when we are trying to follow Jesus, here's the problem. It's really hard to follow Jesus when you're turning back to look at somebody else. It's hard to follow Jesus when you're turning back and looking at somebody else. I have to confess to you and admit, I have personally, even recently, struggled with this comparison trap. I can remember just a few weeks into this global pandemic outbreak. I remember meeting with the pastors, and frankly, there was this season for a while that it was just overwhelming. The world seemed like it was melting. We were quickly trying to read as many articles as possible, having conference calls with the governor that you're listening into instructions for clergy and just trying to keep up with all the information. And at times it felt overwhelming. And I remember just a few weeks into this, I remember this moment that Craig, one of our pastors, walks into my office and he says, hey, did you see what came out? No, what came out? Craig said, a pastor, John Piper, he actually has written a book. It's called Coronavirus and Christ. Yeah, he just published it. And I remember thinking in that moment, it's like I could almost say to Craig, so you're telling me that as a pastor in this moment that I feel overwhelmed, another pastor has written an entire book, edited it, published it through a publisher, distributed it, not just nationally, but in different countries around the globe. And this book has been translated into other languages, including sign language. I don't know what we're going to do next week. Jesus, I'm trying to follow you. You've given me a unique call. But Jesus, what about John? Should I be writing a book right now? That's amazing. And I can hardly keep up. Don't you see? It's so hard for me to keep my eyes fixed on Jesus when I'm looking at someone else. Have you ever had this problem? I'm fairly confident that this problem isn't unique to me or unique to Peter because of the very next verse. Look at this. This is great. Jesus has just told Peter, "Peter, stay in your lane. Mind your own business. Your job, Peter, is to follow me." And look what happens. Verse 22, Jesus says, "If it's my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? What is that to you, Peter? You follow me." And look what happens in verse 23. "So the saying spread abroad among the brothers that this disciple was not to die." Ooh. Yet Jesus did not say that he was not to die. "But if it's my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you?" Look, the very next verse of Jesus telling Peter, "Stay in your lane. Don't look at other people. Focus on following me." The other disciples start spreading a rumor. They're doing the exact opposite of what Jesus is intending for them to do. Stay in your lane, stay focused on following me. And these other followers are going, "Did you hear what Jesus said? I heard that he said that John isn't going to die until he returns again. John will never die. Did you hear that?" And the gossip spreads. And instead of focusing on following Jesus, they're turning left and right and whispering and gossiping. And John has to write at the end of his gospel just to clarify this rumor. "Look, look, look. That's not what Jesus said. Remember, focus on following Jesus." It's not just a Peter problem. It's just not a me problem. It's a we problem. It's a human condition because of sin. We get caught in the comparison trap and we take our eyes off of Jesus. Has this ever happened to you? Have you ever found yourself comparing your walk with Jesus to somebody else? Maybe you've thought something like this. Hey, how come this guy gets to be the captain of the football team and lead the team devotional and prayer time? Why is that his assignment and not mine? It's not fair. Or maybe you've compared your suffering to someone else and you've become a little bitter that your lot in life is worse than another. How come I'm stuck here in this nursing home with diabetes and she is 10 years older and still getting to live at home with help from her family? It's just not fair. My suffering compared to hers, it's not fair. See, and pretty soon in this journey of trying to follow Jesus, we take our eyes off of him, and pretty soon, and instead of becoming more and more like Jesus, following him, our eyes fixate on someone else. And we start to become, or try to become, more and more like somebody else. We live up to them. We try to hit the mark. Or you look to somebody else and you see that their suffering isn't as bad as yours. And you start to become bitter that your journey of following Jesus is so much harder. It just doesn't seem fair. You see, who you follow shapes who you become. And if we take our eyes off of Jesus, we're no longer becoming like Jesus. Who are you following? Who are you following? Jesus has never called you to follow somebody else. And if you've been caught in the comparison trap like me, I can almost hear Jesus leaning into you right now in this moment, putting his arm around you like maybe he did with Peter. And he says this, "Son, daughter, what is that to you? You follow me. Follow me." Jesus wants us to focus on following him. Don't get caught in the comparison trap. Peter gives us an example not to follow. Don't do the comparison trap. But John, in this instance, actually gives us a wonderful example of what it means to have focus on following Jesus. Look at John's unique role. He picks it up in verse 24. John often does this. He's referring to himself in the third person. So John, the writer, says this: "This is the disciple who is bearing witness about these things and who has written these things, and we know that his testimony is true. Now, there are also many other things that Jesus did, and were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written." Peter and John have one call in common, but two separate and unique roles. When Jesus called Peter, and when Jesus called John, the call was the same: follow me. But their unique role, their assignment, with their gifting and what the Spirit would give to them, were very different. Peter was the shepherd, the founder, the rock of the church as it began. John was not. And John wrote a gospel account, an eyewitness account of Jesus' life, and now has a gospel bearing his name in the Bible. But there is no gospel of Peter. That wasn't Peter's role. Same call, follow Jesus, different roles. And John would not get caught up in the comparison trap. He was focused on following Jesus. And it is precisely because John spent his life in ministry following Jesus that enabled his first call to follow Jesus enabled his second role to be that much more effective. Look. John's account, he says it right here. This is the disciple who is bearing witness. He is an eyewitness about these things, who's written these things. And just earlier in our text, John, referring to himself, adds this little detail. He says that Peter was looking back at John, the one who Jesus loved, and the one who had leaned back against Jesus during supper and had whispered a question in his ear. Don't you see? Because John had been following Jesus so closely, living life with him, John was able to write a very unique gospel. You see, Luke wrote a gospel as a doctor who interviewed people and collected evidence and information about Jesus, but not John. John's role in the kingdom was to write a gospel account that was seen with his own eyes. He can write about Jesus and then tell the reader, "I leaned against the Son of God over dinner and whispered a question into his ear." That's how close my following was to Jesus. And that's why in verse 24, John can say at the end of his gospel, "I've written these things, and we can be sure that this testimony of mine is true because I've been with the man. I followed him. I know him." John fulfilled his first call of following Jesus, and it enabled him to have great focus in his second role, to write a gospel account. Peter knew that he needed to follow Jesus, but he became distracted by a comparison trap. John knew that he needed to follow Jesus, and he remained focused on his one role: "I'm going to write this gospel account." Another apostle actually knew this lesson well to avoid the comparison trap, and that's the apostle Paul. And he actually addressed this very issue in one of his letters. In 2 Corinthians 10:13, Paul said this of the same problem. He says, "Not that we dare classify," or, and here's our key word, "compare ourselves with some of those who are commending themselves." You see, Paul was preaching, and he was going around and sharing the good news, and people started comparing his preaching to other people's preaching. And some people thought Apollos was a lot more eloquent in his speaking. And they started comparing, and Paul refused to be compared or judged by someone else's performance. He says, you're trying to compare us with somebody else that's commending themselves, but when people measure themselves by one another and compare themselves, comparison trap, with one another, they are without understanding. Paul says, you're missing the point if you're comparing yourself to somebody else. And in the very next verse, he continues on, and he says this. He says this. Paul says, not that we should compare ourselves, but that I will boast, not beyond limits, but I'll only boast with regard to the area of influence God has assigned to us. It's like Paul saying, look, you're going to try and do this comparison thing. It's not going to touch me, because I know what God has given me to do. God has assigned to me an area of influence, and I'll focus on following his lead in that area that he's determined for my life. I'm not going to worry about being compared to others or being judged by some other person's standards. Paul even recognizes this, and it happens over and over. People judge us. They compare us because of this human condition, but he refuses. He refuses to be compared. He's not going to fall into that trap. Imagine the freedom of knowing that Jesus is not judging your performance by comparing it to somebody else. He doesn't do that. Jesus' first call to you in your life is simply follow me. Follow me. That's your focus. That's all you need to do. Don't worry about what others are doing or the grace and gifts and talents and path that I have assigned to other people. Don't worry about the kind of suffering that they're going to experience compared to your suffering. You focus. On following me. Imagine what life could feel like if that was your only focus. Imagine if you woke up every day saying this, Jesus, lead me, and I'll follow. What if you woke up every day and you said, Jesus, what's my assignment today? You're my leader. Jesus, who are you going to bring into my life today that I could demonstrate love? Jesus, who am I going to interact with today that I could serve? Jesus, is there anybody on my calendar that I could be an influence for your glory? Jesus, I want to follow you. How could I show your love? Will you give me strength today? I'm going to follow you today. I might suffer today. I might get a phone call from the doctor today that I don't want to hear, but I want to follow you. That's my one focus. Jesus calls us to focus on following him. Imagine that kind of freedom. Imagine living life free to follow him and not worry about anybody else's call. Amazingly, John finishes his entire gospel not by focusing on the future of the church, Peter's role moving forward, not even his own role. I mean, he's the writer, the author of this gospel. Maybe he'd finish with a polished remark about himself. No. John, in this epilogue, after speaking about Peter's unique role and John's unique role, he wants to finish on the one worthy of being followed, Jesus. Look at the close of the Gospel of John, verse 25. Now there are also many other things that Jesus did, and were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. I remember studying this, and I remember asking some questions of John. Okay, John, this is your last sentence, and I want to think for a moment. John, are you just using hyperbole? Is this an exaggeration? I mean, you said that if everything Jesus did was written down, the world itself could not contain the books? I mean, John, you're talking about like every library in the world, the CSU library, the three libraries owned by the city of Fort Collins, and then every other library across the globe. Really? And I start questioning. I think, well, John, I mean, Jesus only lived to be about 33. And only three of his years were doing public ministry. I mean, the whole world, libraries of books. But I realized maybe I want to take John at his word. Maybe this isn't just exaggeration or hyperbole. Maybe because of John's scope of his gospel account, there really is more to what Jesus has done that could be written in the entire world. Think of how John views the work of Jesus from the very beginning of this gospel. All that this Jesus, the one we're invited to follow, has accomplished. In John chapter 1, at the very start, we see Jesus as the powerful creator. John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And he was in the beginning with God. Look at this Jesus. All things were made through him. All things. And without him was not anything made. Through Jesus, eternally, who created all things, Jesus has made the platypus, and he has made the Milky Way galaxy and everything in between. This is Jesus. Write a book. No. Write a library worth of books about all that Jesus has done in his creation. I loved, as we studied this text, what Wes, one of our pastors, said about just how massive and magnificent it is that Jesus created all things. Wes put it this way. He said, Jesus created a world that could not contain a record of the things that he did. That's amazing. But it's not just for John what Jesus did as he created things. Jesus was not just a powerful creator. He was also the incarnate Word. Look at verse 14, John 1, 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we've seen his glory, the glory of the Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. The God of the universe stepped down from his eternal throne, and he stepped down from wearing his eternal robe to put on a cloth diaper. This is our God. He has dwelled with us. He's the incarnate Word, but he's not just a powerful creator. He's not just the incarnate Word. He's also the obedient Son. Look at John 14, verse 31. But of Jesus, but I do, Jesus said, but I do as the Father has commanded me, so that the world may know that I love the Father. He perfectly obeyed every command of God, and he perfectly avoided every temptation for sin. Not a moment of misstep in all of his life. He was perfectly obedient as a son. But he was also a suffering Messiah. Look at John 19:30. As Jesus hung on the cross, he'd lived a life of perfect obedience. He decided, I will stand in the place of all of the sinners in the world. Every one of them that I created. And as he hung on the cross, Jesus was able to say, it is finished. All the work of washing away the world's sin, done. Paid for on the cross. This Jesus was our suffering Messiah. But more than that, as he died on the cross, he also rose from the grave as the eternal risen Lord. And in John 20, verse 30, Jesus has conquered death so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. Oh, the work that Jesus is doing was not done in a tomb 2,000 years ago, but he has been doing a work on the hearts of every human born since then, to millennium of people, billions of people, that God is doing a work through his son Jesus to bring glory and honor to his name. Write a few books about that. The world couldn't contain it. And he's not done working. This is the center of John's gospel, the person Jesus. And today, Jesus calls to me and he calls to you. He says, who are you following? What have you been following lately? It's influencing who you're becoming. And this Jesus, this man, is the one who speaks to you and invites you to follow him. Can you trust this Jesus? Is he worth following? Is he worth following? I invite you even today, wherever you are, to make that choice for the first time or to renew your commitment. This Jesus, I will follow him. Let's pray together. Jesus, you are glorious. And I pray to you now as a man who has seen just a glimpse of your glory in your word. And as we've studied this whole Gospel of John, it's amazing what I see. And even now in this moment, it renews in my heart a longing to set aside everything else I've been consumed with and following and to simply follow you. I want to follow you every day. And you're worthy. You're worthy of leading my life and anyone else who would choose to follow you. So God, I pray for them. I pray for anyone watching this, Lord, that right now in this moment you would meet them where they are and that you would whisper to them that invitation that you've said to anyone who'd be willing. Follow me. Follow me. And I pray by the power of your Spirit that many would choose today to let you be the leader of their life and follow you. I pray this for your beautiful name. Amen.
This has been a presentation of Life Point Church. It is our greatest desire that every person would trust Jesus Christ as the leader of their lives and the forgiver of their sins. If you would like to make this decision today or find out more, please visit sharethelife.org.